What's up, world? It's your host, Miles Biggs, and welcome to Unseen Work, where we remind you that the best path to your goals is not always a straight line. Now, I wrote the book on Unseen Work, literally. And after publishing that book and giving my TED Talk, the response to this idea of Unseen Work was so strong that I decided to double down and keep it going with this podcast. Now, each interview originally aired as a video live stream on Facebook, on YouTube, and on LinkedIn. Every Wednesday at 8:45 p.m. Eastern, I hop on that video stream and I interview people from around the world who are seen for something. They're successful in their own right. They've accomplished something monumental, but we don't really talk about that. We talk about the unseen work, the days in the trenches, the sleepless nights, what it took to get them there, and how it made them who they are today so that they're able to be seen as they are. I'm always so amped up after these interviews. I walk away with so many tactics and frameworks that I can implement in my own unseen work so that I can continue to level up all of my endeavors. And my hope in publishing this as a podcast to reach more people is that you listen to these episodes and feel the exact same way. Remember, we have to do this unseen work so that when we are seen, we have something to show for it. All right, let's get to work. What's up, world, and welcome back to Unseen Work. As always, you're hanging out with me, Miles, and today I'm joined by the one and only, the man with one name here on the screen, Ali Abuzalam. Did I say that right?
Very nice pronunciation. Yes, thank you.
Nice. That's all. First, love the name. It's a badass name. I've not heard anybody with a cool name like that before. So you get brownie points from the very beginning, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it actually, Abuzalam actually means father of darkness. So even when I'm in the Middle East, people are kind of like, that is either a cool name, like you said, or that's kind of a strange one, man.
Dude, that's cool. Jeez, talk about unseen work. Your freaking yeah. Name, father of darkness. That's sets you up for some stuff right there. So is that like, you know how sometimes when people talk about when they immigrate over to the United States, their last name got changed, right? Is that like truly what it was intended to be, or did it get like the spelling got weird and then it kind of meant something else later?
No, that's what it's, really our name. So my family is Palestinian, and a lot of Arabic people, they'll call the father of the firstborn like Abu, father of. So my dad would be called Abu Ali, right? But a lot of last names also are like father of. Just like here in the United States, you have a lot of last names that are named after a trade. So for a long time, I always believed maybe my ancestors were like some dark people, but now I like to switch it and think that they were people, as I am a person that is someone who is well acquainted with the dark and helps people come to the light.
That's cool. I like that, man. And that ties really into what you're doing now. So we can touch on that a little bit. I know you're an entrepreneur, you've had some different businesses, and your most recent endeavor, you could frame it that way, right? Bringing people from the dark to the light with what you're focusing on with accountability and like helping people reach their goals. But I'd love to hear it in your words. What is this most recent project you got going on?
Yeah, definitely. So I recently launched my new business as my name, aliabuzalam.com, and am an accountability and confidence coach. So my primary program right now is Accountability Ascension, because so many of us simply don't do what we know we should do, whether it's due to procrastination, the billions of distractions that we have today, laziness, and the list goes on and on and on. And I have found, because I've been a professional at all those things, procrastinating and being lazy and all those things for a long time, and I have just found over time, in my experience and observing people, that we tend to show up for others more than we'll show up for ourselves. So really socializing accountability in my Accountability Ascension program, where you have a custom built tool, you have accountability partners that are going to keep you accountable, that you have to show up with week after week and have these accountability discussions, share your goals, has been extremely powerful for me. I was actually doing it just as a hobby for 6 years before I decided to create it into a business. And I only decided to do that because it was just making such profound changes in people's lives who I would invite in to be in accountability groups with me, and started kind of building off from that. So it's been an extremely fun journey, and it's just so humbling and fulfilling to just help guide people to find their purpose and reach their goals.
So 6 years as a hobby, that's a long time, and a weird hobby for many people, right? Like, what's your hobby? Accountability, right? So how'd that happen? What's the genesis of accountability as a hobby and now as a business?
Yeah, well, I've always been very attracted to personal development and public speaking. And I've always said since I was young, I want to be an edgier style of Tony Robbins. So I've read most of Tony Robbins' book, and I always read personal development books. And at my first job out of college with an oil company, my direct manager was very similar. His name was Chad. And, you know, on my lunch break, I would eat and read. And he's like, you know, and I was always reading personal development books. And when I left that company and started my own business, V-Nails in the cannabis industry, he sent me a book, and The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And in that book, it talked about the importance of having an accountability partner and a lot of the things that I just mentioned of how we show up for others more than we show up for ourselves. And Chad and I, we created this spreadsheet that laid out your goals, very comprehensive. And we started being accountability partners from there. And I just found out after it kind of faded, we did that for maybe about 6 months, and then kind of faded away. I realized when I didn't have that, I was so much less productive and other parts of my life could fall away. Like if I was really exceeding in career, then maybe health and fitness was falling back, right? If I was really exceeding in health and fitness, then maybe my spirituality was kind of taking a back seat, or my relationships and so on and so on. So I was like, man, I need to start another accountability group or get another accountability partner. And I just posted a couple things on social media like, hey, I've been doing an accountability group. It's changed my life. I'm wondering if anyone would be interested in doing this with me. And I remember I was like, maybe like one or two people reply, and I got like 26 replies. And I was like, whoa. So then I was like, okay, you know, more than four people in my experience would be excessive. So I had people kind of apply and tell me why they want to be in the accountability group. And then I formed one, and with all the other people, I kind of tried to manage, again, just in my own time, those groups and see if they could become self-sufficient. And like I said, it was just really, really fulfilling. And for me, fun of just really being like, wow, man, this has helped me so much. Thank you so much. It felt really good to be of service and to actually be delivering something of value to people. Cause I think all of us, especially today with so many distractions in the world, we fall victim to not always doing what we know is in our best interests. And it was just an honor and privilege to be a little piece of people's progress to be doing what you know is gonna take you to your best self or where you wanna go.
Yeah, it was cool. I totally agree with you. You know, we tend to show up for others more than we show up for ourselves. But what's cool is that oftentimes when we do show up for others, we end up showing up for ourselves too, right? It's the act of you reinforce what you know by teaching it to somebody else. So all those books you read, you're saying it. And then as you're saying it, it's like, oh, wait, I'm actually saying the exact thing that I need to hear too right now. And that's been my experience. It just reinforces it, whether it's in mastermind groups like we've been a part of together, or in my career where I lead a marketing team within an agency. And so like every week I have one-on-ones with my direct reports that are sort of like accountability coaching sessions. And I always find that to be true. As I'm telling them what they should be doing, I'm realizing I should be doing that too. And it's a good reminder.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So is this just a you thing? Or is this in your family? Is this like you grew up just surrounded by this and that's why it's so easy for you? Or are you like an anomaly in your family?
I would say, I guess more on the anomaly side. My mom was always the nurturing, loving side of like, you can do anything you put your mind to, son. Like, right. you can do whatever. And then my dad was like, nothing was ever good enough for him. Right. So I spent a big chunk of my life always trying to get my dad's approval. And even when I would get, you know, the straight A's or do good in sports or whatever it was, he was just always like unimpressed and kind of had that like, well, you could do better, you know, mentality. So I think that really pushed me of my mom always believing in me and then my dad being unimpressed with me to achieve my biggest and wildest dreams. And to this day, I'm not very good at like putting away dreams. You know, I'm always like, yeah, I'm still going to do that one day. And, sure. Sometimes probably to my detriment, but, I think that we are blessed with an incredible life during an incredible time, incredible technology and opportunities that we often underestimate what we can do in a lifetime. And it's like, why not? Why not try and live your absolute best life and make your childhood self proud? Achieve those childhood goals, achieve the new goals, and try to achieve it all. And I think so much happiness comes from achievement, as opposed to extracting happiness from, instant gratification type of activities of really creating things, building things. And then when you include other people that you love in it, or even people that you can help in it and give them your love and passion, that it becomes even that much more fruitful and satisfying. And like you said, you empower yourself more by being of service and by helping others. So yeah, I wouldn't say it was more of like my family dynamics. But yeah, my immediate family, they're not as much into like personal development stuff as I am.
Sure. It's the same way with me. So I can totally relate to you. And I wouldn't say my parents listen to just about every podcast I put out. So I'm not going to say, mom, dad, that you weren't, like you said, your dad wasn't impressed with you. I think my parents, like, they were impressed with me, I guess. But I've said this on podcasts before, and then they comment to me. They're like, were we really that bad? Or like, we like mess you up or something? Because one thing they always used to say, and it stuck with me, and it was part of what drove me to like always try to be better, is same thing. I did very well in school. Honors, AP classes, all that good stuff, right? So I bring home an A, but let's say it's a 98%. They wouldn't be like, great job, 90%. Their initial reaction would be, what happened to the other 2%? And so it's like, well, shit, like, I don't know, I got that question wrong. And so it was like, okay, cool, but don't be satisfied. There's always room to improve. And that just got hardwired into me. Like, even now, when someone asks me to rate something on a scale of 1 to 10, I can't bring myself to say a 10. Like, it's like a 9 is like my highest, because there's always that other 2% in my mind, right? That it could be better. It's no way it's perfect.
Yeah.
In some ways it's good. And in some ways I think it's like it has kind of messed me up a little bit, right? Where it's like most people are just satisfied and like you, like, don't kind of give it up. Like, I never just stop. I'm always like never too impressed with myself, I guess, is the way I'd put it. And so I'm always trying new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's a fine line, and it's a fine balance, I think, to really get the most out of juggling that mentality, because it's really important. An important lesson I recently had was really celebrating your small wins, you know, and I have been so bad at that, but very much like you, of like, you know, I'll achieve something that's worth at least a small celebration. And I'll be a lot more focused on what could have been better.
Right. Or what's next. Like, cool, check, did that. Like, immediately go to the next thing instead of just enjoying the current thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I had an interview with somebody today, actually. And it's funny, I'm wearing my TEDx shirt. But I'm interviewing them to work in the company that I work for. And they're researching me before the interview. And so literally at the questions of the interview at the end, they're like, can I ask you a question that's not related to the job? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm thinking like, that's kind of weird. What is this? And then they like had like dissected my TED talk because they watched it. And they're like, when you said this, what do you think about this? And blah, 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 blah. I'm like, wow, that's cool. And they, it's the first time they've seen it. So for them, it was this new idea. For me, I'm sick of it because it's like, I've lived with it for so long, but it was a reminder for me, right? That even though I'm not impressed with me or I'm always thinking about what's next, like these things we do, like these little moments in time that now get preserved forever on the internet, like have the chance to be something new for somebody and impress them and have an impact on them. And it's just neat when you think of it that way, right? And now that allowed me to kind of relive it and have my own little mini celebration today. It's like, oh, that's cool. I did a cool thing. It's out there. People like it. You know, it's a good reminder every now and then to get that, brings you back down to earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely important to celebrate those successes and wins, because when we don't, it becomes we put our happiness behind these achievements, right? And it's just this cycle of like, you get to your goal and then you're immediately unhappy again, and it's on to the next thing. So I think that's great that you were able to extract some happiness from being reminded of your achievement.
Yeah. So it's actually this is the line of questioning I tend to ask people about, because people I have on the show have done some cool stuff, right? It's like they're seen for something, and I love to unpack the unseen work that got them there. But I call that moment we're describing right now, when you reach the goal, like that's point B. If you think about typical goal setting, you want to go from point A to point B, right? When you reach point B, now you're staring down the barrel of point C, right? That's what I call it there. And point C for me is like that oh shit moment that happens when you actually achieve the thing. It's like, again, take the TED Talk as an example. I worked for a year on that, like lived and breathed that thing to memorize it, create it, whatever. So focused on getting it done that when I got it done, I didn't like take time to contemplate what would be next. Mm. And so I'm like, oh no, like it happened. What do I do now? And in some ways there's like the emptiness, like it's almost a feeling of loss. Like this thing is gone. That moment I've been building up for is no longer here. It won't be here again. So what do I do now? Well, how do I go from point B to point C? So I love your perspective on that, because you've done multiple things. You mentioned B-Nails as one business that you did, and now you're doing something else. We haven't talked about it yet, but I know you have a fighting career, which is a whole nother thing. So for you, when you had those moments of this, oh no, I actually did it, what do I do now? Like what's been a point C for you? How do you transition that?
That's a fantastic question. So going back to B-Nails, the story behind that was I started my career in the oil and gas industry. And from a very young age, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I won a district-wide, or my group and I won a district-wide entrepreneur competition in the sixth grade. And awesome. Yeah, it was so cool. Do you remember Blockbuster and Hollywood Video?
Yeah.
And how we like would rent the video games and stuff. Well, our concept was, I had a bunch of like video game guys that I was friends with in the sixth grade. And our concept was, okay, at the arcades, they never have the newest games that you can rent at Blockbuster. Instead of having to pay $5 or $6, whatever it was, to rent that game for 2-3 days, how cool would it be if the arcade, you could just spend your quarter and play the newest games? But of course, arcades, you know, they're the big machines and stuff. So we were like, what if at this district-wide competition? So that was our model. We brought our N64 and our PlayStation and all the systems then. And I remember like carrying my like TV, like our 32-inch or whatever it is, the bigger TVs back then. And some of my friends like, all right, I'll bring one TV and one N64 and one PlayStation. And then we had like 50 cent to a dollar, and you got like anywhere from 5 to 25 minutes. And it was the whole district. So it was like 8 middle schools. And our booth was on fire. Like everybody was coming, and I just felt this thrill, and my team and I were so proud. And we won the district-wide middle school entrepreneur competition, and we each won $100.
Wow.
And then in sixth grade, $100, you're like, I'm freaking rich. Like,
seriously.
I can get all the snacks, all the ice cream, like whatever I want. And it was just this awesome experience. They took us on stage, and the speaker was talking about how as an entrepreneur, like the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. And after that moment, that whole experience of winning that competition, I was like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. You know, so fast forward to college, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get into the business school, but I don't really know what I want to do. So what I'm going to do is like in the business school, do whatever major is the highest paying, and work in the corporate world for a couple years, save up, and then I can be an entrepreneur. So that was my plan. And I went to Texas Tech University in West Texas, which is oil and gas capital of the world. And right. They had a specialized program in the business school called Energy Commerce. And at freshman orientation, they were like, so this is the highest paying major. You negotiate oil and gas leases. It's very competitive, blah, 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 blah. It's like sales for oil and gas. And the starting salary is higher than all the other ones. So I was like, that's mine. That's the one I want to do. Right. So I jumped into that. And then fast forward to graduating, got into the oil and gas industry as a petroleum landman. And it was a lot more than just the fun negotiating oil and gas leases. Sure. But essentially, I was kind of able to do that. And when I saw on the news in 2014 that cannabis was legalizing in Colorado, I was like, ooh, that's my opportunity to be not only an entrepreneur, but a pioneer in a multi-billion-dollar industry that's just starting in its infancy. So I put the Colorado, I was living in Texas at the time. I put the Colorado mountains as my phone background. It was like, somehow, some way, I'm going to get to Colorado. And I did, after months, finally, a CEO of the oil company one day was like, I was bugging him like, hey, you need a guy at the Denver office. I'm your guy. We'll get business going. Da, 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 da. One day he calls me in his office. He's like, Ali, you still want to go to Denver? I was like, yes. And he's like, all right, let's go. So I went and, had my office set up there and everything. And for the first year, I was just so busy with work that I didn't get to do much except get a med card and go to a couple networking events. But eventually, just like believing somehow, some way, like looking at my background on the phone, like cannabis industry, somehow, some way, I get a call from a high school wrestling teammate. And he's like, hey, man, I saw you moved to Denver. I'm up here in Fort Collins, Colorado. I know you're a business guy. I have this product idea, and I want your opinion on it. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm super busy. What's the product? And he's like, it's a way to dab without the torch. And for our listeners out there who might not be familiar with dabbing is a slang term to describe the consumption of cannabis concentrates. So it's like hash. It's a concentrated form of cannabis. It's more like a wax. And the primary way that people use it is with like a butane blowtorch as the heating element. And the first time I had seen that in college, it was from a pledge in my fraternity. And he was like, hey, Ali, you want a dab? Fired up the torch. And I was like, hell no. Whatever that is, I want no part of it. That, you know, you look like a crackhead, whatever. And he said an analogy that always stuck with me. He said, man, this is just weed, right? Like, you're smoking the beer of weed. This is like the liquor, like concentrated form. And I was like, okay. And in my head, I was like, when someone figures out a more elegant way to consume that, it's going to be huge. So fast back forward to my conversation, boom, I was like, oh my God, a more elegant way to consume that. So I was like, okay, I'm very interested. And I went over there. He knew how to like build computers and build these things. He's like, look, this is the electric nail. This is the product. And long story short, I invested some money. Sure enough, we bought a competitor product. The ones that he could build were better. I was 23. I had no idea how to start a business, what to do. But then eventually we, got an LLC and we're like, all right, like, let's buy some products. So that's, before I knew it, I got to point B. You know, I was like, I want to start a business in the cannabis industry. I have no idea how or what. And I was like, whoa. And then once we were at point B, it was kind of just walking through fog of like not really knowing like where exactly point C is, but just moving forward and trusting the process. And that was kind of the example with B-Nails. And today, you know, we've been around for, we just hit our 6-year anniversary. Within those 6 years, we've generated just over $2 million in revenue. We've patented a few products, and it's, when it comes to cannabis industry vaporizers, we're in the talks. You know, we've come a long way, since then. And a lot of it was honestly not really knowing what the hell I was doing, but trusting in the process, eventually getting mentors, getting help, and just trying to make it to point C. And I will say that now point C/D is gearing up for a sale. So I would say that there's not, I definitely don't have like a written formula of like what happens when I get to point B. For certain things in my life, point A, B, and C are a little bit more clear. But honestly, Miles, for a lot of things in my life, it's really all about having faith and just making sure that it aligns with what my purpose is. And a big reason why I am selling B Nails now is because it's not so aligned with who I am now as it was when I first started it. So hopefully that answered the point C question.
Yeah, it did. And it's what I've found in my own life and hearing from some other people, right? It's like, I think you said it best, before you knew it, you're at point B, like without realizing you're at point B. A lot of times it's true for point C, D, whatever too, is you only realize it like in hindsight. You see, call it fog or just like the grind or whatever you want to call it. Like until you stop and have some reflection, it's hard to recognize it for what it is. In the moment, it's just another day in your life. And then you look back and realize, oh man, blah, 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 right? Here's how it connects. So it's interesting. So how do you think B Nails, that whole process, and I know a lot of what led up to the sale was some regulation changes that just like totally took your business and flipped it on its head, right? It was out of your control. How do you see that whole experience now informing what you're doing as an accountability and confidence coach, right? Like how do you build off that experience to level up what you're doing in the next thing?
That's a great question. Well, now I see it as a blessing in disguise. You know, I had my point C/D a little bit further along in time to be around like federal legalization and to be able to sell it at a much higher valuation and all these things. But that was really prolonging me from actually executing on what my true dream is, which is to be a coach, a motivational speaker, one day to be on a TEDx stage like you, to empower others through programs, retreats, and life transformational services as opposed to just a product, you know? And what this challenge has done for me is really forced me to really look in the mirror, to look at my business, to look at the landscape and be like, are you willing to fight harder and longer for your current business that you're in? Or do you want to fight to build something else? And the answer was like, I really want to do what I'm passionate about. You know, like I've been in it for 6 years. I was a lot more passionate about it when I started. But a big piece of it, the majority of it was primarily financially driven, to where now, like I said, it was a hobby, 6 years of the accountability stuff. And I found that that is more spiritually driven. That is soul driven. That fulfills me more than selling any amount of vaporizer products could. And it's been a blessing in disguise to be like, you know, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, be like, hey man, it's time to pivot. It's time to actually follow your dreams. And yeah, it may be scary. You may not, point C may not look like what you originally thought it would, but it's time to make a change and actually do your real dreams now.
Yeah, it's what I love about what you just said is that you could admit that to yourself, right? So many people get stuck continuing to do the thing because I said I was going to do this business. And so I did it and I don't want to be seen as a failure or a quitter. And so I'm just going to stick it out, even though they don't like it. It doesn't align with who they are today versus yesterday. It's not fulfilling. And they just like, they feel like they have to. So they do, instead of realizing they don't have to do a damn thing. They don't want to, right? There's always another option. You just have to be willing to admit, have some of those hard conversations with yourself, have some of that personal accountability, right? You got to hold yourself to that. Which is cool. So I said the word failure there, and I'd love to talk to you about that. I'm curious. I'm sure you've had some along the way, some trip ups, right? You had a good failure story for us. And before you answer, I have two lanes I like to put these in. And I talk about this in the talk and in the book. One's the flip and one's the flop. So FLIP, which is fail, learn, improvise, pivot. So this is where you failed, you messed up, but you were able to learn from it. You're able to take a different direction, you know, come up with some new ideas and some improv and then pivot and move forward. But then there's the flop, which is fail, lie, obsess, pretend. So I love to just think of like literally flopped face down, like defeat. You failed, sort of lie about it to yourself. Then you play that game in your own brain where you obsess about the fact that you failed until you just sweep it under the rug and pretend that it never even happened. And so you don't really learn anything. You don't move forward. It's just a straight flop versus flipping it into something else. So when you think of that, flips and flops, you have anything that pops in your mind for either one of these? That'd be a good story, some of your own unseen work here.
Yeah. Yeah. The first thing that comes to the flops has to do with MMA. So I've loved martial arts and wrestling and all of that stuff since I was really young. Wrestled most of my life. And then one of my life goals was to, you know, kind of again, point B of like win amateur MMA fight by 2019. It was on my goal list. And then 2017 was around and I was reviewing kind of my life goals list and was like, I better get going on this.
You know? I got 2 years left. Let's go.
Yeah. Like, and I hadn't been training. So I joined Charles MMA in Fort Collins, started training jiu-jitsu, and I started competing in jiu-jitsu first. And the flop story was my first loss, or the first couple losses I had in jiu-jitsu were from getting leg locked. And that's just like an aspect of the game that I always just kind of flopped on it, lied and obsessed about it, right? I'm like, oh, like only because of these leg locks, like this, you know, this isn't in MMA, like people wouldn't be able to leg lock me in MMA. And I would get so frustrated and angry when I would get submitted with a leg lock. So that's kind of the primary one that comes on the flop. And just kind of pretend like it was an irrelevant match because of that. And not really accept that,
sure,
dude, this is a part of jiu-jitsu. Like, you need to learn how to defend leg locks and play the leg lock game because it's a big aspect. So that was the first one that comes to mind for that. And then the flip, could you repeat that acronym again?
Yeah, fail, learn, improvise, pivot.
Fail, learn, improvise, pivot. Huh. So I have a lot of those throughout the 6-year journey with B-Nails. And honestly, right now, I'm going through a flip right now, which has led me to the sale. Because like you mentioned earlier, there's been some federal legalization that has been a huge blow to my business. And I'm learning a lot from it, how I can improvise and pivot around that. And a lot of it is around just all of the teen vaping crisis and things like that, that our industry is kind of getting tied into, even though it was more targeted to the Juul vaporizers, tobacco vaporizers instead of cannabis. But kind of like I was mentioned earlier, I'm improvising and pivoting. And one thing that I really like to do, Miles, is imagine the worst case scenario. I don't like to stay there and dwell on it, but I like to at least be aware of what's the worst that could happen here. And with this, the worst that could happen is, you know, I go bankrupt or go out of business and my 6 years of hard work kind of goes down the drain and I didn't get to sell the business, right? And right now I'm pivoting in a way to ensure that that doesn't happen. And doing what I can to make sure that I can package up the business and sell it. So this flip is still in progress, my man. And I hope that I can, that I have a nice success story about the pivot here soon. But I would say that is definitely the biggest flip in my life. And in a sense, it's very scary because it could be a crushing blow. But at the same time, even with the worst case scenario, I'm very grateful because it has allowed me and enabled me to launch my coaching business. And I already have paying clients and getting that starting. So that's where I'm at, man. It's an exciting time right now.
It is exciting. Yeah. And even if it didn't work out and you can't sell it, I have a hard time believing like it would be down the drain, right? Because you're already taking it and learning from it and building something. Plus, in some weird, twisted way, I feel like people love that defeat story when it comes to you being like an edgier Tony Robbins, right? It's like when people get up and they're like, my life's great. It's always been great. And you should listen to me because I'm great. People are like, who is this guy? But when somebody gets up and they paint that story of their business failed and they had nothing and then they clawed their way back, it's like, now we want to buy whatever you're selling us, right? So maybe it's just what you need to become that edgier Tony Robbins.
Maybe.
Father of accountability guardians here.
I love it.
I like it. That's cool. So the MMA thing, I want to come back to that because that's how I was first introduced to you. Funny enough was, you know, Miles, our friend we have in common, Miles Hansen, who's been a guest on this show too. He was putting this group together and you were going to be in it. And he's like, you got to see this guy. He's going to be the group. He's really cool. And he sends me this video of you just destroying some guy's like face in an MMA match. And I was just like, oh my God, this guy's intense, a little intimidated by you. That was my first intro. And then of course, you know, I'm sure you could kick the crap out of me in a cage for sure or on the street, but you're actually very nice guys. We're learning here tonight. Nothing to be intimidated by. How does the MMA thing translate to business? Because on the surface, two different things. You've got the physical sport aspects. You could argue some personal development crossover, but on surface, you could put them in two different buckets. How have you found that training for MMA has made you a better business person? And likewise, being a business person has made you a better fighter?
Great question. And there's there's lots of ways, but I would say one of the biggest lessons that you can pull and that are both complementary for MMA and being a business owner or entrepreneur is your capacity to deal with discomfort, a high level of discomfort. And that can be from getting punched, kicked, being choked, the endurance, being extremely, extremely dead tired and having to continue. And same thing with being a business owner, you know, that pain and discomfort, whether that comes from angry customers, getting into debt, working so hard on a project or new service or something that fails, bad reviews, manufacturing problems, and the list goes on and on. And I think that especially for anyone out there that's thinking about going to business or entrepreneurship, we only see the glamour, right? Of like, oh, I started my own business. And there's really, I haven't seen at least any accurate depiction of what it really, really takes. Like the long hours, the skipping payrolls, the getting into debt, the fear, the uncomfort. And a lot of that, it translates so well to MMA, especially when you're actually going to fight, right? When you're preparing to get in the cage with another man or another woman that is going to be doing everything in their power to knock you out or choke you unconscious or try and snap one of your limbs to where you have to tap out, emotions will arise within you, and you have to be able to navigate those emotions, be aware of those emotions as they come up, and remind yourself why you're doing this. Remind yourself that you are well trained, that you are prepared, and that you're going to go out there and be that man or woman in the arena, and that you're going to improve from the experience. So I think that a big piece of it is the dealing with discomfort for sure, because it can be very uncomfortable to be a business owner and a fighter. And then also the the understanding that you're going to grow. You know, when you, that there's something special, there's something really special about going into the cage and being to being able to not only express your art form, really express your primal energy to the fullest. And then same side in the business world, right? When you become a business owner, you don't have a boss, or have to worry about being fired. So you have an opportunity there to really express your true self, to really have a voice to decide what your branding is going to be. You're in the marketplace and you have that freedom of expression. And that's the same thing as an MMA fighter. So I would say full freedom of expression as well as embracing discomfort.
I like that. It looks like the people like it too. We got some comments coming in. So this is a long one. It's actually truncated. I can't even show the full thing here. But let's see. George Ryman on LinkedIn. Personal satisfaction, perspective we choose to look through. He's giving an example of family vacation. We're split from five members. Okay, interesting. So yeah, he's talking about other people's, I guess, perception. Some people rated high, other people's rated low. Interesting. Yeah, that's a good point, George. I'll have to head on over to LinkedIn and read the full thing. But thanks for tuning in, man. He's got another one too, George, saying personal accountability is an earmark of adulting. There you go. My three-year-old certainly is not being held accountable for anything. Not holding himself accountable for anything. So yeah, definitely an adult deal. And then you'll like this guy, Ollie. Kenneth Duner. He is like, he's going to cram every positive vocabulary word into one, multiple comments here. He does this all the time. He brings so much energy to the comment section. Always like having you in here, Ken. He's got this one. He's got this one. We're savoring the flavor.
Scrumptious.
With Ken. Thanks for tuning in. Those are piling up.
Nice.
So this is the website, right? I got that right?
Yep.
So let's wrap it where we started talking about what you're doing now. If people go to this website, what are they going to find? They like this conversation and they want more of you. What's the next step that they should take?
Yeah, I would say definitely take a look at the website. And me as a coach, I like whenever I get the question of like, you know, so why should I trust you or why should I jump into working with you? I tell people that they shouldn't, you know, that what they shouldn't just jump in or trust me right away. I'm not for everyone and everyone's not for me. And the best way to find out if we can work together and really build trust and have the opportunity to work with each other with accountability is to check out my site, check out some of my content, whether it's my podcast, The On Purpose Podcast, which is on the site as well. You can follow me on Instagram. You can check out some of my YouTube videos and really, really get a feel for who I am and what I'm offering. And then from there, if you do feel like it's a good fit, we can book a call and talk about the program. But here on the website, you'll be able to subscribe to our email list and find all the links to everything there. You'll learn a little bit about my story and really learn that my program, Accountability Ascension, you're going to gain primarily three things out of that: clarity of purpose, a foundational gratitude practice that we didn't really get to dive into that much today, but I'm a huge advocate of daily gratitude practice, whether it's 1 second or 1 minute, having some sort of little practice there, and then building confidence is a huge thing. So gratitude, purpose, and confidence, as well as, of course, the accountability that ties it all together.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you sharing your story with me here tonight, or whenever your eyes listen to this on the podcast, if it's the morning, whatever. Your story in general, man, it was really cool. I like learning more about you and love the points you made. So thanks for making the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, Miles. I really appreciate it. And hopefully with your busy schedule, we can get you on the On Purpose Podcast one day as well.
Yeah, I love that. That'd be fun. I have more fun like being in the guest seat now than I do being the host, because it's like, to me, I do this all the time. It's just fun to kind of sit back and show up and talk and then learn from how other people do it, right? It's always interesting. When you're not the host, how do other people handle the conversation? I always pick up a few different ideas. So let's do it.
Whenever you want to. Sounds good. Well, this was great. Thanks again. And I will be tuning into future episodes as well. And thanks to the community as well. Thank you guys.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Take care.
And that brings us to the end of our episode of Unseen Work. Please subscribe, rate, review this podcast so that we can continue to grow and spread our message. Be sure to hit up the links in the show notes for more details on the guests and our sponsors. And if you love this idea and this mindset of unseen work, head on over to milesbiggs.com. That's MYLESBIGGS.com for more info on the Unseen Work Mastermind community, where we put these interviews, these thoughts, these ideas into action and hold each other powerfully accountable in our unseen work. Remember, you have to do the unseen work so that when you are seen, you have something to show for it.